Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
I'm Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie.
Welcome to Something's Off, a true crime podcast where we talk about recent, current, and vintage or classic cases where something might be off to us.
Yeah. And we also talk about Karen Reed, Extended Universe. Let's be real. That's one of the things we do quite a bit.
That's how we started. So, hi, Rebecca.
Hi, I have something to show you. Oh. I unveiled this at our taping of Crime Writers last night. I got a swear jar for the studio, and I am going to preload it for this taping with $20. Just want to let you know.
I appreciate that. It's usually me.
No, it's usually me. I swear a lot. Anyway, what are we doing
today?
Oh, thank you very much.
That's really cute.
My new pillowscape, my sweater.
Yep.
I'm like fall AF today. It's really cold here. It got really, really cold in New Hampshire really quickly. Like it went from being comfortable to being uncomfortable in one day. So. You know how it is.
Same here. But we didn't get any snow. Did you get snow?
We got a dusting, just like a little dusting. But up north, I got a ton, so.
Yeah. All right. So
we also talk about the weather on the show, apparently.
Tangent heavy, like we've said. A couple of things. Again, just want to thank all the tippers. You guys are amazing. And I am going to thank several of you. Oh, right. I've got to put the
graphic up. Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks for reminding me.
You're welcome.
And for those of you who are listening and not watching, the Venmo to tip is Mel Barrett Writes. And Barrett is spelled with two R's and two T's.
Mm.
And Writes is like, I'm a writer. So W-R-I-T-E-S.
Yeah. Not like writes it like a ship.
No.
Although you are Mel doing Barrett that writes. To some extent.
I don't know. We'll see. So at the end of this episode, I'm going to list off a few names. I'm still trying to figure out, we're still working through all the YouTube stuff, but thank you so much for those of you who have signed up for memberships and those of you who have sent us super chats. That's amazing. I'm still trying to figure out what all that means. if I miss you,
we're bad. We're bad at grifting. We're really bad at it.
Know that we love you and we really appreciate you. And I think that probably in the very near future, we're going to try to do some sort of a YouTube live.
That'd be fun.
Right?
Yeah, that would be fun. Get like eight people watching live, have other podcasters yell at us about how few people we have and call us losers and all the other stuff. I'll tell you, a few weeks ago, I was really generous with all these people. And now I'm like, all of you can fucking knock it off. You are being it's so navel-gazy to talk about a feud that nobody else is a part of. Except for, it's just like, stop it. Stop criticizing each other's shit. Just stop it. It's like a feud among subcultures, but like a really boring feud in a subculture.
Yeah.
That's my take on it. So
drama, drama, drama.
Yes. Yes.
So let's get into, there have been a few updates this week, mostly centering around Corey Hopkins, the email dump, and the vanishing of her Twitter. Do you want to...
Sure.
Give us your thoughts.
Sure. I want to make a brief clarification. Last time we talked about the Mosher cold case, I just want to be clear. It is very unclear whether or not it was a real case or not. It could be. And some people are saying it absolutely is a real case. And there's somebody on Twitter purporting to be Mosher's brother who says it is. And I just want to say, like, we speculate sometimes on the show. We know we're doing it and we're not trying to be inflammatory. But I still... would love to know if there are notes from that day. Okay, so on to Corey Hopkins. Corey Hopkins is, of course, Marbury v. Mad. If you want more about the name behind that Twitter account, go a couple episodes back where I explain it. But Corey is an attorney from North Carolina who has been suing and subpoenaing and FOIAing. Not subpoenaing. She's been suing and FOIAing for documents related to the Reed case. She's especially interested in the sidebars. And filed a preliminary injunction for relief. And the response to that from the NCDAO was wild. They basically said, we need clarification and blah, blah, blah. And the sidebars, they made a couple of filings. But in one of their filings in the bottom, there was a footnote that said, we think your honor should know that Ms. Hopkins is not just a citizen. She's a lawyer, and this is her bar number, practicing in North Carolina. And her photo on Twitter is the same as on her lawsuit, her law firm website.
That's so strange.
And in her reply, it was fantastic. She was just like, you know, didn't any lawyer abdicate their rights as a civilian just because they obtain a bar number? And she said also said something about her photo being so phenomenal that even though it was taken before she started work at the law firm, she decided to use it on all of her electronic stuff, which I'm like, good on you, girl. If I had a shot that was that good, I would do the same. So
it's a great shot. And also, just to clarify, she is representing herself pro se,
right.
Which I think is, so for those of you who don't know what pro se is, means it just means that you're representing yourself.
Correct.
Instead of hiring another lawyer. So I feel like they were bringing that up a bit too. Like,
she's not just pro se, she's an attorney.
Not only is she pro se.
Yeah.
So I it was a strange, weird personal attack. And then to put it in a footnote, I just was like, oh, you guys, this is so ugly.
So then Corey's Twitter disappeared. You know what happens? People like silence their Twitter, all their tweets go away. It's still there, but it's like no content can be found or whatever. That happened. And there was some speculation that the NCDAO was like fucking with her, like going for her law license. That is not true. She just decided to take a break from Twitter, collect herself, get her shit together. Not that her shit was bad, but like, you know, do some stuff. She will be back from what we understand. But in the meantime, Emily C. has been posting a lot of the stuff that Corey Hopkins has been able to obtain, which is interesting. And I just want to say, Corey, I know you're probably not watching this, but if you are, you are a real one and everybody knows it. And you're super nice. So.
So much respect for Corey and all the work that she's doing and taking all the shit from Norfolk County. I mean, I love it when she gives it back to him. I love it.
Absolutely. And she's also, you know, going after stuff from Canton PD. I hear that this is going to come out Friday morning, right? She has a meeting with the new chief, the interim chief of the Canton Police Department today to talk. Friday, which is the day
Friday
is dropping. See, I was doing the space-time magic.
Shit,
thing.
You
Let
were
do
doing,
it.
Right. You were
taping
being the
this on Thursday.
Again.
It's coming out on Friday. So she's meeting with them today, Friday.
Friday.
Yes. And apparently, you know, people seem very encouraged by this interim police chief. They think that he could be genuinely trying to usher in the culture change that everybody's in Canton has been wanting to see. Of course, we have Good has been put on some sort of leave while an investigation goes on to him. And then we heard this week that Berkowitz's son is no longer with the department. So, but I guess Kevin Albert's son joined the department. It was a whole thing. Anyway.
Great.
There's a lot going on there, but I'm interested to hear what is the outcome of that meeting. So,
yeah. And some of the emails that, so Corey put a few of the emails up last week on her Twitter and there were some on Reddit. This week, after more of the LawTube folks got into, I think she must have sent it to some of them, the dump of emails. There were a couple of emails that I wanted to talk about briefly because they were so interesting to me.
Yeah.
One of them, it was a lot. There were a lot of emails between Michael Proctor and several other people. One of the emails was between Michael Proctor and the medical examiner, Scorty Bello. And if you remember from her testimony, she did not say that this was homicide.
Right.
She said it was
the
undetermined. So there were a couple of emails that went back and forth where Michael was like, if I can ask, you know, if I can answer any questions for you, please let me know. I'd love to jump on a phone call, blah, blah, blah. They ended up jumping on a phone call. And then the follow-up email was Scorty Bello emailing Jeannie Hatch, who I don't remember who Jeannie Hatch is. Do you remember who Jeannie Hatch is?
No. Doesn't matter.
No.
Keep going.
Somebody in the office.
We're so accurate. We're so like, on point this episode. Go ahead.
Hey, at least I have the name right. Jeannie Hatch. And so she emailed Jeannie Hatch and she said, hey, I spoke with Michael Proctor and quote unquote at length. And I asked for anything that Massachusetts State Police has in writing. And then she put in writing underlined in the email because she's like, I can't give them what they want, basically. I'm paraphrasing here. I can't give them what they want unless they have a better, you know, grid of this of the area. Now, because John's body was moved, nobody actually did any kind of grid when he was there, when he was lying there. So, of course, she has no idea where he actually was or how that worked.
And neither do they.
And neither do they. And, you know, Michael Proctor was going back and forth with, I always call him Tommy Paul. What's his name?
Paul.
Officer Paul.
Trooper Paul.
Trooper Paul, thank you. I mean, I don't know what his first name is. I always call him Tommy Paul.
That's like
in my head.
The new line of golf wear, Tommy Paul.
Yeah. Yeah. In my head, I call him Tommy Paul.
Tommy is a like proper sounding first name for Trooper Paul. Tommy.
Tommy Paul.
Tommy
yeah.
Paul.
So there were also emails going back and forth between Michael Proctor and Tommy Paul where he was like, dude, do you have anything? And he was like, no, dude, I don't have anything, you know? And
you know
so
why?
They were just
because there wasn't why? Anything.
No.
Because he wasn't hit by a car.
No. So they were, it was obvious that Michael Proctor was really, really pushing. And then, you know, if you remember from the trial, there was the follow-up. I think it was DeChico who was like ribbing him, like, dude, you should have gone in there and told her what you want or whatever.
Tell her what's what.
Tell her what's what. Anyway, so I found it really interesting that Scorti Bella was like, I can't do anything for them unless they have some shit in writing, and they don't, so fuck them.
Yeah. What I love about this storyline, by the way, is that Scorti Bella wasn't supposed to be there, right? Didn't she come in from like the western part of the state to cover?
She was like, I'll come in to help.
Makes me wonder like who they're used to dealing with and what it's usually like. Because if they're used to being able to get what they want, which it seems like they are, she was an early domino that didn't fall in their favor, which is because she's not. And it's funny. I actually know, my husband knows better than I do, a Massachusetts State Police detective from Western Massachusetts. He's a friend of my husband's sister's. And like when he talked about this case early on, his whole thing was like, the whole conspiracy thing was like so like hard for him to swallow because like it's just not what it's like where he works. And I'm just like, I'm glad. Good for you. He's like, over here, it's like, we don't do anything bad. So like, you know, it was hard. I think it would be hard for a good cop to swallow. But I do think that she was an early domino that didn't fall because she's used to working probably with police with integrity. That's my opinion.
Sure. Side note, it's weird to hear you call Kevin your husband. I don't know why. And not say his name. It's kind of like the opposite of, you know, when you're in a relationship with somebody and you call them by their first name and they're like, why are you calling me by my first name and not babe?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it sounded like to me. So husband Kevin Flynn.
Kevin Flynn, my husband, co-podcaster. He hosts a great podcast about Law and Order and SVU called These Are Their Stories. And we also host Crime Writers together and do lots of other things. He's wonderful. Anyway, he also is working on our business right now so I can be down here with you, goofball. So...
He's a good guy. The only other email that I wanted to bring up, which this one really sparked some interest for me. So Connor Keefe was the guy who went to the autopsy. And I remember in the last trial, they showed a picture of Connor Keefe and another guy in masks standing there. And everybody was positing that the other guy was Michael Proctor. It does look like him. I don't know if we ever got to the actual truth of that. But Connor Keefe was at the autopsy. He emailed Michael Proctor and said, Waterfall and C.F. McCarthy video reports. Let me know if you want me to edit anything. Now, to play devil's advocate, I know that he may have been talking about like, hey, there were typos, like I spelled something wrong. Do you want me to fix that in the official report? But with everything else we know about this case and we know about Michael Proctor and we know about what people were doing behind the scenes, when you put in writing, let me know if you want me to edit anything. I mean, my brain goes all over the
place.
It's
a report.
What were your thoughts?
There's so many things that are like tiny that very likely mean nothing. But they deserve a microscope. Like the autopsy thing that said that John was wearing one sock. When there's pictures of him in the hospital wearing two socks, it's like, sure, maybe they just took a sock off to do something. But like... It just creates, it sort of bolsters the impression that they wanted to give that he was knocked out of his clothes, right? Like, and, you know, and this does not help in terms of like the veracity of the evidence. There was another one where somebody emailed Colleen Crawford and asked her for a still image from Karen backing out of the driveway, which would show her broken taillight. Didn't look anything like what we saw. Everything feels like it has meaning. I am willing to concede that most of it probably does not, but doesn't keep me from reading it and assigning meaning to all of it because that's how shady these guys are. So,
agreed. And I think it's interesting because I didn't put this in our notes, but I feel like we should mention it that the Epstein estate.
Republicans and Democrats in Congress working on the Epstein investigative, the committee that was investigating released a bunch of documents, and there's more than 20,000 right now. And reading them, first of all, these billionaires cannot write for shit. The way they talk to each other, it's like when my son used to send me emails when he was like in junior high and like all emojis and shit. And I was like, what are you talking about? But it is like most of it is kind of pedantic, kind of boring, kind of nothing. And then when you find something that seems a little sus, you're like, oh, what does that mean? And it's like, eh. I mean, it probably, there's a bigger, the whole point is that though with Epstein, this is a big picture.
Huge,
and
yeah.
All these little things, it's easy to assign them meaning because we know he was in fact a pedophile. He did in fact bring other rich guys on his plane to his pedophile island, people from across all walks of life. Let's just not pretend they were all whoever we politically disagree with or not. That's not the case. We know that. And so everything seems like so like urgent, right?
You know, there's so much we don't understand that happens behind the scenes. And I think the thing that frustrates me about the emails that we're seeing from MSP and the emails that we're seeing from the Epstein estate is that we are forced for a time to take what is being said to us from representatives, people in power, on mic, on camera, as fact until we see, you know, the evidence to back it up. Right. So in this situation, the one thing that does stand out to me is that, you know, Donald Trump for so long has said he had no idea what Jeffrey Epstein was doing, which, you know, he contradicts himself because then he says, well, I got rid of him from Mar-a-Lago because he was stealing people from me. So the idea that we have it now corroborated between Ghislaine Maxwell and Epstein that Trump absolutely knew what Jeffrey Epstein was doing, I wonder where this goes. You know, there was a huge call. This all started with Pizzagate, with the, you know, in the first election between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
And Q.
And QAnon. So QAnon basically started this whole Pizzagate child sex trafficking thing. And they all have been demanding the Epstein files. I think I'm most interested to see how people sort of twist these, you know, Proctor emails and messages, how they're going to handle this now when it goes against their confirmation bias.
Right. It's been interesting, you know, to watch because, you know, and I just want to let our audience know, like, we're not talking like we're talking about politics, like in a clinical way. We're not telling you to believe what we believe or think what we think. And we're not even really sharing too much about what we think. But this is an interesting analog because it is interesting to see what transcends loyalty and what does not. And there is obviously Q is bananas, the whole concept. Obviously, Pizzagate was bananas. Any reasonable person, even the most loyal MAGA person who's reasonable, would see that because it was bananas and it fueled a bunch of shit. But these conspiracies often start with like a whisper or a grain or a thread. And one of the things that folks should understand, and I'm not saying this is what happened here, it isn't, but the U.S. government has a long history of fueling conspiracy theories, because if something is a conspiracy theory and they can point to it and say that's wackadoodle conspiracy fringe, but they fuel it, they add flame to they seed messaging, they let it bloom, they amplify it, because it helps them cover up the shit they're really doing. Like, this is why forever and ever and ever, like denying the existence of Area 51 by allowing it to be a UFO-fueled conspiracy theory that there was this secret base where we were studying UFOs. Meanwhile, there was a secret base where we were testing top secret aircraft. So for the public to think it was an alien thing, let them disavow the whole thing for a very long time. Obviously, its existence was confirmed like in the 80s or 90s or whatever. But like for a very long time, they were able to disavow this whole thing. But they were testing the B-2 there. They were testing all these like important planes there. So this is kind of like that, in that supporting Q, bolstering those folks, bringing them into your tent, having them, those messaging be, you know, allow, you don't understand like how usually parties fucking tightly control the messaging of reps and senators, like, you know, Marjorie Greene posting stuff, Taylor Greene posting stuff on her office door, and like the Jewish space lasers and this and that and this. Bringing these folks into their tent, honestly, was smart because it does help deflect. You can call everything a hoax on both sides. Yes. And then when something happens that's real, you can call it a hoax and people might believe you. But this, I think the reason why it's transcending it is because it came from the far right initially, the push to do this, right? And that's where it sort of originated and came from. And now it's like, this is the loyalty test that people can't seem to pass. It's like, oh, but we're only here because of pedophilia. That's what brought us here. That's why we voted for you. That's why we joined this movement. That's why we now believe in all these other things. And there really was pedophilia. So like, yeah. You know, and
it really was.
And it's not, it doesn't pick and choose. Like seeing Larry Summers and all these emails and seeing, you know, all this other stuff does not pick and choose between who's politically aligned with left or right or whatever. It's like sick rich guys who,
yes.
For some reason, being that rich makes you so bored that you need like more and more and more and more and more. And I think that's how these things kind of go. But it's real. And it is interesting seeing people being tested. And you'll see a couple people even on Twitter, you know, got Magdalene, their handles being like, I'm getting new information and I might be wrong about everything I've ever thought. And it's like people, by the way, on the left have done the same and should question
yes.
everything. Everybody should question everything. That is the way
Absolutely.
That I feel about it. But like, it is interesting to see that this is a particular test that people can't quite just push to the side. So that's my take.
Yeah.
On it.
And I think that we should all want the transparency.
Of course.
I think it doesn't matter what side you're on. If there are, you know, powerful men, And I don't think there were any women involved. There may have been other than Ghislaine Maxwell. But if, you know, these powerful men need to be exposed if they were sexually assaulting and selling girls.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So aliens and pedophilia.
I'm just thinking that people listening are probably like, she probably wouldn't say that if it was Bill Clinton. I'm like, oh no,
bullshit.
I think Bill Clinton's
no.
a monster and always have. But anyway, that's yeah. just, that's a personal feeling.
We went down the road of aliens and pedophilia. That's all I know.
That's all we know. And by the way, people on the right should actually like Bill Clinton because he is one of the most conservative presidents we had in my lifetime. Facts. Except for that he does seem to be a not good person. Anyway.
No.
Moving on.
So.
Moving on.
Now, is that everything we have for updates? Do you have anything else that you want to add?
Yes, there's one I really want to talk about real briefly. So Lindsay Gay Tanney continues to be a very intriguing figure in the whole extended Karen Reed universe. Lindsay Gay Tanney was, of course, one of the people working with Kate Peter to be very anti-Karen Reed. Lindsay Gay Tanney also accused Aidan Carney of sexual assault. And then it was a charge against him for witness intimidation against her because they made her a witness. But I'll get into that in a second. She now seems to have broken off from, well, she doesn't seem to have. She has broken off a year ago or so from sort of the clan of Kate Peter and so forth. And she's been spilling a bunch on Twitter and on her own Substack, which I have not looked at because I know it's behind a paywall. But I do look at her Twitter stuff when I want to opt in. I don't follow her on Twitter, but I look. Not that that makes me a better person than anybody else. I just like my feed is already such a mess that I'm always just like, I want to be able to opt in. Anyway, she posted a very interesting video, earlier this week, which really speaks to where she's going. Now it has been the sexual assault charges against Aidan Carney were dropped and there's tape of everything that happened. And it's pretty clear. It's always been clear to me that her accusation was untrue, which, you know, I believe women, but in this case, I don't because it's not true and it has been sort of shown to be not true and the charges were dropped. But she is now being sued by Turtle Boy for defamation and she is suing the Norfolk County DA's office, the cops, everybody. It's a mess. It's what's caused all these lawyers in Turtle Boy's case, prosecutors to have to recuse themselves, blah, 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 blah. So she posted a video earlier this week that I think is one of the most interesting and definitive links in the proof chain that the Norfolk County DA's office basically indoctrinated this private citizen to their own ends. This was from...
I'll put the audio in the episode yeah. so you all can make up your own minds
yeah.
about it.
This is from a former Massachusetts State Police trooper named Leah Genduso, and she sent this voice memo to Lindsay Gay Tanney way back in like end of 2023.
Lindsay, I just totally thought of something and I'm sorry, I haven't been on the job for 5 years. So sometimes it takes me like a little bit longer to process stuff in my head and recall stuff. But I would highly recommend you going and talking to Joe Mello tomorrow. Because if you become a witness, he can't do shit to you. Because then that's intimidation of a witness. So there's no revenge porn. There's no contacting you. There's literally no speaking of you. There's nothing. And they could reiterate it in the discretionary stuff when it comes to the standards of the witness and the application for everything to be done by a judge where he can't even mention your name. He can't talk about your kids. He can't dox you. Oh, my God. This is like I didn't think of this, but by you calling Mello and having potential like information to help that case and then putting him as a witness, that gives you like the perfect thing to not have to worry about any of this, because he'll be more scared he's going to go to jail.
Okay, so what this is this woman, Leah Genduso's story is complicated. Nutshell, she hates Turtle Boy. He wrote about her many years ago about a scandal when she was a state police officer. She hadn't disclosed, or she had disclosed, she had been involved in some criminal activity. Apparently they hired her knowing that she was able to get promotions, potentially for reasons that, you know, other people didn't get promotions, but she did. Like, it was a whole thing. He wrote about it. She hated him for that. You know, her whole career trajectory changed, all that. She's a disgraced, quote, former trooper now. But then a couple years later, because of something else, some other reason, amazingly, the two of them, Turtle Boy and Lindsay Dusen, end up having a relationship, like a sexual relationship.
Of course they did.
Which,
of course they did.
It's documented. I mean, it's out there. This is not something that's a secret. It's wild. But now, after that, again, she's on the full-on I hate Turtle Boy train, and like approaches people that she knows also hates him, and they all band together. That's how that's been Kate Peters' whole life for the last however many years or whatever. So this woman, Leah Genduso, left this voicemail for Lindsay, basically saying, like, I have this brilliant idea. Call Mello. He's a special prosecutor in Turtle Boy's case, or was. Now he's ill, I guess, isn't anymore. And call him. And this was about her making herself a witness. And Lindsay's motivation, I mean, sorry, Leah's motivation seems to be saying, Turtle Boy won't be able to write about you anymore. He won't be able to do anything to you anymore. He won't be able to embarrass you anymore. He won't be able to talk about you on social media anymore if you're a witness, because he knows that he's in trouble for all these other cases. So, like, he will leave you alone if you do this. I don't think she was saying be a witness so that they can arrest him. I think that it was the first one. But the Norfolk County DA's office wanted this stuff from these people, and they wanted her to become a witness so that they could potentially arrest him, charge him, do something to him. They didn't see things the way these wily, scheming group of women did. And this wily, scheming group of women it's so fucked up. All the texts you've seen, all the things I've seen are so messed up. This voice memo is like maybe the most important thing that I've seen of that so far. But it is the beginning of the chain where then she calls, you know, tells them, you know, whatever she ends up telling them, they end up making her a witness in a grand jury that for like basically for the only reason being so that Turtle Boy can't mess with her. And in their mind, that's a question of criminality. And I think in Leah Genduso's mind and in Lindsay's mind at the time, it was probably a question of like online what they perceive as bullying or leaving her the fuck alone. So this is a very, very important piece of audio, in my opinion. It's interesting to me that, you know, I think that like I still got a reporter like Ted Daniel, who's like doing right now really interesting work around, like, for instance, the mileage stuff and the cold case stuff. This is the kind of thing that I think in a while, like from now, people will realize how important this piece of audio was. I heard it and my mind was blown by it. So, yeah. What did you think?
I mean, I think when you started telling me about it, I recalled all of the information I knew about Leah Genduso.
Yeah.
I remember there, one thing sticks out to me. There were like billboards about her because she had also been named, like, I don't know, the cops had done something where they were honoring her and they put her on billboards. She was very attractive. I think they were using that to sort of sell, you know, being a cop or whatever. So a lot of the stuff that I knew about Genduso, you know, I sort of threw it into the bucket of Turtle Boy drama. But I also knew that all of this was happening behind the scenes. What I'm most interested in and what I can't wait to see happen, and I hope it happens. I've mentioned this before. This falls in line with, you know, what I hope and wish for Dever to do as well. It seems to me like Lindsay Gaetani has realized that she might have been on the wrong side. And now she has a trove of personal communications with all these people that seems to be involved in this conspiracy, including Jen McCabe, yep, including Kate Peter.
We know she's got stuff with Jen McCabe because she said so.
Yes. My hope is that, and this is a stretch, but my hope is that she might end up working with Turtle Boy and sort of exposing all these people and getting to the bottom of this. I think she, of all the people that are involved in the drama that involves Turtle Boy, Lindsay Gaetani probably has so much information that if she shared it, it would open everybody's eyes.
Yeah.
And I don't want her to go on Twitter and get drunk and, you know, do whatever she does.
Yeah.
I don't like that. That bothers me. It makes me feel bad for her. It makes me feel like she is in a bad place. I think that she can find some power and she can find herself again if she could release some of this information. That's my thought. I want to touch on one other thing. We get a lot of comments on the YouTube about how hard we are on Turtle Boy. And I just want, for the audience who doesn't know us very well.
I text with him. Like, I know him a little bit. Like,
yeah. And also, yeah. You know, if you haven't watched the or listened to the readathon, you know, we've had Turtle Boy on the show a couple or maybe one time so far. I think we're going to probably have him on again at some point. You and I both have a lot of respect for him. For what he's trying to do and how he, not necessarily how he goes about things. We both actually kind of like given him shit for that. Like, I remember, you know, when he came on the readathon, I was like, what the fuck was going on in your brain that made you stand in front of that camera and talk shit after you were already in trouble? And he was like, I had some sangria, you know? Yeah. So, like, I don't agree with his tactics. I don't necessarily agree with his politics. But I
necessarily that, you definitely necessarily. Don't.
I definitely that's you're right. I definitely don't, which we've also talked about. The thing I respect about Turtle Boy is that I can have that conversation with him and it doesn't turn into this sort of like whataboutism bullshit that we normally see in like political discourse. Right. I can say I don't agree with you, but I believe in what you're doing. And I, you know, so I just want to make it clear to the audience on both sides of this. We're not trying to rag on Turtle Boy. I believe in
we also don't belong to there's like this whole like language about like turtle they're belonging to a cult. I'm like, what cult? Like, nobody has asked me to get a card and be a member of any cult. I've never donated to any money but not because like I think it's wrong, just because I'm that's not what I do. Occasionally I'll if I hear something interesting happen on one of his streams, I'll look at that thing. And you know, when I say we text, I mean he's very willing to answer a question. Like, if I have a clarifying question about something I saw, I can be like, what did this mean? Because I only know that he's the only person who knows. And he'll tell me. Like, he is a curious guy. He's open. He's, man, you know, the way he talks about women, the way he talks about all that shit, like, if you know me even for 10 minutes, you know that I, you know, if I were friends with him in real life and we saw each other, I would be like, shut the actual fuck up. What are you doing? But that's not our discourse is about this. And our discourse is about the corruption of the Massachusetts State Police and Norfolk County DA. Our discourse is about the context. Our discourse is about, you know, the things that have legitimately happened, whether or not he inflamed them or not, that are unconstitutional. So, so that's where, I think that's good that you clarified that. I always assume that people take other people at face value when they say things, but I've come to realize that in this little corner of the internet, just like with the Proctor emails, folks assign value and meaning to things that are not valuable or meaningful, so.
Absolutely, so I just wanted to say that because I think that because we can be so honest with him, you and I tend to talk about that side of it, our honesty with him, and not the other side of it. So when people hear us talking about, you know, the drama or that he thinks with his dick or, you know, all those things, they automatically assume that we hate this guy. And I don't hate this guy at all. And I want to make that very clear because of the, you know, of the people in my life and the people I know, I probably should hate the guy because of his views. But I don't. I have a lot of respect for him. And I appreciate the fact.
He also reminds you of all your uncles. Let's be real.
That's true. He reminds me of all my uncles back in New England. With my uncles, I could be like, listen, stop being an insecure fuckboy and like handle your business. And they would be like, oh, yeah, you're right. I'm an insecure fuckboy. And that's exactly how Aiden would respond to me.
It's how he is also on his stream. So be like, yeah, I did what I do. I should stop letting people slide into my DMs. But, you know, that's just how he is. Anyway.
That's why I say I have
affection toward him. I can't help it. Like, he kind of reminds me of people I know, too. Anyway.
Yeah. If Lindsay Gaetani can keep going down the path that she's going down and seek to help shed some light on what's going on, I think that would be a very good thing for her soul. And I think it would be a very good thing for the rest of us to understand what truly happened behind the scenes, whether it's Turtle Boy or Karen Reed.
Yeah, it is very, very, very hard to walk back a rape allegation. It's very fucking hard. I wonder if at some point she'll be able to come to some, like, it was a misunderstanding, like, point where she's able to figure out a way to articulate it that she doesn't feel like will ruin her life forever, and that, you know, where she'll be able to say, no, she'll be able to sort of bolster it later. So maybe she will, but it is very, very hard to walk back a rape allegation. And I think I can imagine it would be very, very hard if you are the recipient of a false rape allegation to then come to an accord with the person who accused you of that. But stranger things have happened in the extended universe.
The easiest way to walk back a rape allegation, especially in this situation, is to simply tell the truth, which is I was fucking pissed at him and I thought he used me and treated me horribly. And so I went after him.
Mm-hmm.
End of story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but now, like, when you say things like that and you admit what you did, admit guilt and say, but now I'm going to try to work hard to make things right.
It's also a crime, though, to report a crime falsely.
Yes, so absolutely.
It's hard. It's a tricky thing. But
you
are very kind to her. You're very generous to her. You always say you feel bad for her. You always say I'm working to try to be as kind and generous as you are. I don't think Kelly Dever is ever going to change, for instance, but I'm working on it. I'm trying to work on it because you are very admirable in that way. I feel for her because her life is extremely messy. She's clearly very smart. She writes articulately. She seems really bright. I know she was a nurse. It's not super easy to become like an RN. And the fact that she is using so much of her energy and her brains on this makes me incredibly sad. And the fact that these people immediately go to, like, all of them, her included, what about the kids, whatever. It's like, fucking stop it. The fact that, like, someone is a mother does not make them more ripe for attacks and abuse than someone who isn't a parent. And this is shit that only women get, and it's fucking bullshit. Who is saying to all the poorly behaved men, what about your kids? What about them? No one is saying that to them. They're only saying it to the women. So fucking knock that shit off. Ooh, swear jar. But
we've already gone up to the 20
bucks, I feel that she has, I feel that she has made herself a very vulnerable person, and people take advantage of that. And so I agree with you that there's some empathy that should be had there. So,
yes. Okay. I think that that's everything for the updates. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No. I would like to have you tell me about this thing you want to tell me about.
Yeah. So I want to do a trigger warning right here at the top. A lot of you have probably already heard about this case. It is very, very current. It's happening right now. And I will post a link to the arrest affidavit in the show notes. I want to give you full warning that within this arrest affidavit are victim testimony. It's victim testimony, basically. Victims saying exactly what happened to them in this case that I'm about to tell you about. And it is very difficult to read and hear and think about. So just, you know, be kind to yourself. If you can't handle something like that, please don't. And if you know, you don't have to listen to this. We are going to be talking about extreme sexual assault.
Sexual and domestic violence, right?
Yes. So, you know, take care. You don't have to listen to it. But the arrest affidavit for Jesse Mack Butler will be in the show notes. If you haven't heard of this case, I'm going to try to give you a brief breakdown of it. And, you know, obviously bear with me. I'm going on, you know, reading news articles, reading the arrest affidavit. I'm going to try to get everything right. Sometimes I don't get it right, so go easy on me. But Jesse Mack Butler was a 17-year-old affluent varsity baseball player in Oklahoma, in Stillwater, Oklahoma. And in late 2024, these two girls, and I say they're girls because they were under, I think they were 16 and 15 at the time, walked into the school resource officer's office and made a report that Jesse Mack Butler had raped them and nearly strangled one of them to death And then a police investigation began at that point. So I don't want to go into all the details.
I've skimmed this. It's bad. Let me just say, anybody who's ever been in an abusive relationship will recognize much of this stuff, especially if they are in an abusive relationship in high school, which I was. I'm looking through this. I'm like, this is rings so true. It rings so true. It rings so accurate. At one point, one of the girls said that when they were in a relationship together, she would have sex with him frequently because if she didn't, he would become aggressive. There's like all of these so telling, so true things, escalation stuff. And yeah, it's harrowing. It's harrowing. But these are very young people who are telling the truth. So
yes. And I'll go over some of the charges. And I think when I say the charges out loud, you'll sort of understand some of the things that this kid did. So again, Jesse Mack Butler is 17 years old, and these two girls were 16 and 15. I think there were other victims, but I haven't. Everyone says multiple victims, every report I've read, but I don't see any other, you know, testimony or whatever from other than these two girls. And both of their families have been heavily involved in speaking out against what happened in this case, too. So right after the police began investigating, one of the girls also asked to have an emergency protective order placed against him, which was granted. The difficult part about that is that they all went to high school together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, definitely he's going to be in areas where this other girl is. But he decided he was going to make it his job to put himself in places where he shouldn't have been. So he would walk up to her in the parking lot of the school, not say anything, but just glare at her, you know,
intimidation,
things like that. Yeah. So intimidation. So basically in January, so this went from September through the end of the year. And then in January, despite the court order, there was an incident where there may have been a violation of this protective order. And one of the victims reported that Butler showed up in the parking lot, which is what I was just talking about, and other areas that she had, you know, been frequenting and was making her feel harassed and intimidated. He didn't speak to her, but he would position himself like on her walk to school, you know, like that he shouldn't be there, obviously. Later in January, one of the victim's mothers met with the Stillwater police to report that he basically was violating this EPO and that they wanted something done about it and that they were scared of this kid. They should have been scared of this kid because his family is very well connected. His mother works at OSU, Oklahoma State University. His father used to run the entire athletic department at OSU. Jesse himself would express to these girls while he was sexually assaulting them that if you tell anybody, you know, you're not going to win. No one's going to believe you because my family is powerful and blah, 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 blah. So it was very reminiscent of like the Murdochs. And it makes my skin crawl. But anyway, so March swings around. Finally, the police have an arrest warrant for Jesse Butler. And let me tell you how they got to this arrest warrant. This is the part that really, really bothers me. Well, one of the parts that really bothers me. Both of the girls who signed these complaints and wrote out this, you know, what happened to them, they both said that he would force them into sexual situations. And when they would say no, he would threaten them, like we said before. And then he would strangle them. He would choke them into unconsciousness. And then while they were unconscious, he would sexually assault them to the point where they would go home bleeding or have bruises on their necks or, you know, things like that. One of these instances, there are two incidences that I want to speak on because they stick out to me so much. One of the girls was in his home, in his bedroom or in some room in his home. And he was pressuring her and to the point where he was physically trying to rape her. And she was screaming no to the point where there was a knock on the door and his mother came up to the door and said, "Is everything okay in there?" And he said, "Yeah, mom, everything's fine." And she went, "Okay." And she walked away. So his own mother knew something bad was happening in that room and did nothing. Mm-hmm. That was one incident. The second one was that he was telling this girl, "I want to choke you." into unconsciousness and I want to record it. And she was like, no, I don't want that, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, he started forcing her to have sex with him. And then he did choke her into unconsciousness and he recorded it on his phone. And the doctors afterward, because she ended up having to go to the hospital because of this. And the doctor said that if 30 seconds more had passed while he was strangling her, she would have died. So he recorded this on his phone. She put that in her report to the police. And then so when the police got, you know, his arrest warrant and they were able to search his phone, they actually found the video. Mm. So I want to make this very clear because I've covered a couple of cases on the In Between podcast where women have been sexually assaulted and they were told there wasn't enough evidence to convict or they were blamed themselves for something else. In this case, these two victims, their statements were completely corroborated by evidence.
And believed, by the police.
And believed. Yeah. The police believed them. Everyone believed them. And so Jesse Mack Butler was arrested. Now, his arrest, I guess I haven't mentioned this and I don't want to get too far into the politics of this, but Jesse Mack Butler is this very large, like I said, very affluent white boy. And I'm going to put this video in the episode because we have the whole body cam footage of when he's arrested. Mm-hmm. The police go and knock on the door and no one answers. And so they're getting ready to, you know, head back to their cars. And then this woman, this middle-aged woman, pulls up and they realize it's Jesse's mother. And so they're like, yeah, we're here to arrest Jesse. And the video is, how do I put this? The softest,
it's
kindest.
Surreal. It's very surreal.
Arrest.
I watched it. Yeah.
I've ever seen in my life where they're like, yeah, we just need to talk to you. And his mother is like, you know, well, we're going to want to tell our story too. And then they allow his mom to knock on the door and say, Jesse, it's your mom. You got to come out and let me have your wallet and your phone. And, you know, we're going to get this taken care of. And then she mentions a few people's names that are on the way to take care of this. And I can only assume it's his father and other powerful people like lawyers and things like that. You know, and then the cops, it's a woman who is arresting him. And she's like, you know, you're going to have to be taken down to the station. I am going to have to put handcuffs on you. And his mom is like, oh, do you have to put handcuffs on him? And she's like, yeah, we have to put handcuffs on him. And, you know, you're going to be taken down there. You're more than likely going to get bonded out. You won't be there for very long. We're going to give your mom all the information she needs to get you out, blah, 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 blah. They're handling this oaf with kid gloves.
We're ready to obviously tell our story too.
Yeah.
Jess, it's mom. Open the door. It's me.
And if you'll just have him step out.
Okay. Give me your wallet and phone and stuff. So, okay. Your what?
They're in the car.
Well, okay, it's fine. It's not locked or anything, is it? Okay. So, can you tell him what you just told me?
So we're here. We're obviously going to place you under arrest. There's a warrant for your arrest. We're going to take you to the jail. I told your mom that she can contact a bondsman, and you shouldn't be very long, but there just is a process for paperwork and stuff. But right now, you do have to come with us, and I do have to put you in handcuffs. So turn around for me.
I'll get you out for me. All right. Stay silent. Rick knows about this. Candy's on this. Dad's on his way. We're coming to get you, okay? Stay strong, okay? Say your prayers.
Okay, so he's going to go right to the city of Stillwater Jail, and if you'll just contact her, then she does this all the time. She knows what to do.
Yep.
Make sure she knows Stillwater Police Department, not County.
Stillwater Police Department.
Yeah,
on Lewis.
Yeah.
Let her know that we're the ones that picked him up.
And when you say we are the ones.
Stillwater PD.
Stillwater PD.
Yeah.
Okay.
That way they don't think he went like straight over and over to the county.
Awful experience for a child.
Pastor.
spread your feet for me. Nothing in your socks.
I think that's how everybody should be handled. The problem is everyone isn't handled that way. It sounds like they were doing a good job keeping themselves safe because they don't know if they're going to knock on someone's door to arrest them if they haven't come to the door, if they're going to be armed or whatever.
Sure.
They're keeping it de-escalated. They're keeping it quiet. That, to me, is the right way to arrest somebody.
Yes.
Rather than the way we see video of other people being arrested, including Karen Reed, by the way, and others.
Right.
So go on. I'm sorry.
That's my point. I mean, I guess if you... You know, let's do the, what is it? What was that movie? A Time to Kill with Matthew McConaughey when he's like, now imagine she was a white girl, you know, to the jury. I always think about that movie and this and that book in these situations because I'm like, imagine if Jesse Mack Butler was a black kid.
Yeah.
He would have been hauled out of that house, thrown on the ground, slammed into, you know, and mom wouldn't have been able to talk to him. You know, who knows what would have happened to him, especially if he had assaulted a white girl. And so Jesse has walked to the car. He is now crying. And his mother is like, this is a horrible thing to do to a child.
He's a child. Yes, I heard that part.
He's a child. He's a child in this part. So they arrest him. He is immediately bonded out. They pay to get him out. He never spends one day in jail. That's what I want to get to, the conclusion of this. Okay, so he's facing 11 charges against him, which would have him serving 78 years in prison. They are going to charge him as an adult. Some of the 10 sex-related felonies are rape, attempted rape, rape by instrumentation, sexual battery, strangulation, assault, and then one felony count. They included the protective order in the felony counts, right? So he's facing up to 78 years. We're not really sure what happened between him getting charged and what ended up happening, but the district attorney, Butler's defense, and the prosecution engaged in some sort of negotiations, and they decided to charge him under the youthful offender law.
Right, which would keep him, if incarcerated, only until he was like 18 or 19, right? That's usually how that works.
He is not going to be incarcerated, this
right.
kid.
I know that. I'm just saying what it's supposed to do. The youthful offender stuff is supposed to, with states that have it, it's supposed to take, and by the way, I, in principle, agree with youth offender programs and youth offender sentencing because the data shows that people who commit crimes when they're teenagers are they are able to be rehabilitated more so than older people, but also that people do age out of criminality. And I do think that the youthful offender program is a good opportunity for people to not spend 40, 50, 60 years in prison for something they did when they were 16. That being said, it's also a great way to not have to pursue a very difficult trial sometimes. And I don't know if that's what happened here. I don't know so the idea would have been that if he had been sentenced to time, that time would have been spent in a facility for youth and he probably would have aged out at it at like 18 or 19. That's usually how it works, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's basically the law is specific to 16 to 17 year olds who are charged with serious felonies. They want to sort of give them a second chance. I completely agree with it, too. Generally, what would happen is he would be rehabilitated through the juvenile system. So he would, you know, he would probably go to like a juvie and he would be there until he was 18 or 19 instead of facing immediate prison time. So you're right. He ends up pleading no contest, which, if you don't know what no contest means, it means he is not accepting guilt, but he is saying that he understands that these things happened, I guess.
Or very no often contest it means is always, that I understand that you have enough evidence against me to convict me.
Yes, that's what it is.
But I am not saying I did it. I'm just saying it's sort of like it's sort of like folding in poker. Like,
yes,
I'm not going to win, but I'm also not going to play anymore. Like, just going to fold and hand my cards back.
He pleads no contest. The judge grants the, you know, juvenile rehabilitation. And he ends up getting 150-ish hours of community service, no social media, no jail time. And he's going to be on probation for, I think, until he's 19. He is not going to have to register as a sex offender. And the only thing he has to do is he has to do his senior year of high school virtually because it is, and no one feels safe with him in the high school.
Yeah.
So that is that was the final verdict from this judge, Susan Worthington.
There have obviously been rumors that the prosecutor and the judge have connections to his family and that, you know, pressure was put on them. I don't know if any of that's true. It feels that way to me because I don't know if I'm a prosecutor or a judge and I see the evidence which has been corroborated of what this kid did. And I haven't gone into detail, obviously, but if you should go and look at what this kid did, mm-hmm. it's not the kind of thing, the way that I see it, in my opinion, it's not the kind of thing where, you know, he's like hopped up on his hormones or whatever, and he is trying to have sex with whoever he can have sex with because he's a high school kid. This is violent. There's intimidation, there's coercion, there's gaslighting. And then on top of that, add the physical, you know, assault of strangling these girls to the point of one of them almost died. To me, you know, they were saying that this he's a first time offender. He's not a first time offender because he's done it to multiple people already.
Yep.
He's a repeat offender already.
Yep.
And he's going to keep doing it. There are signs there that, you know, psychologically, this kid is probably going to keep doing this.
Right.
He's going to go away to college this year.
So if he doesn't, he has to behave though, right? Because if he doesn't behave, then
what does he have to do?
He just has to go by the terms of the program is what it says here. But like I have so many questions when I hear cases like this. Is this
Yeah, me too.
Andrew Tate manosphere indoctrination stuff? Is it a situation where he's mirroring the behavior of another person in his life that he's seen do and that's become acceptable? Is he the victim of abuse? I'm not saying that any of those things are excuses, but they might be like, how does a 17-year-old end up like this? Sometimes it's literally a situation where being exposed to things on the internet and then having your parents think everything you do is wonderful because the boy parent thing is real.
Yes.
The boy yes. mom thing is real. The boy parent thing is real. My, you know, little angel can do no harm. Boys will be boys, that kind of thing. There mm-hmm. was somebody the other day on Twitter talking about how, you know, they got their kids' report card from kindergarten back and it had these high marks for their social, you know, and emotional skills. And the person on Twitter was literally like, I don't care about any of that. I just want to see how he does in math. And I'm like, great. Awesome. This is bad. And
very
a lot
bad.
Of other women are likely in danger in the future because of these decisions and this negotiation. So how has the reaction been from the community and from the victims?
Not great. Everyone's pretty pissed and they're holding protests. I want to show you one. I think I sent this to you in text. I'm going to put this on the screen for the audience too. This is a picture of Jesse Mack Butler sitting outside of his hearing room, his mother and who I have heard is his sister.
Yeah.
And I want you to make a determination about what this kid thinks is going to happen to him or, you know,
yeah.
or what he thinks of the justice system and what he did and if he's in the wrong.
It's almost funny. This picture looks like it literally looks like a still from like a 1980s movie. Like he looks like, first of all, there's some 1980s hair going on in this picture, but.
And he's wearing those giant Oakleys.
He's wearing these big and like 1980s style, like ski style. Oakley's. He's got tight mm-hmm. white jeans on and Docksiders, which whatever. And it looks like a sport coat. But there's a lot of nonchalance going on here. And that granted, it's just a still image, but it's not great optics for sure.
This is his album cover for sure.
Yeah.
The craziest thing about this photo is that it was taken by one of the victim's mothers.
Oh my goodness.
So they are, his sister is staring her down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, I'll put that up on the screen so the audience can see it. And for those of you who are listening, I'll post it in my Patreon and then I've sent it over to Rebecca. If you want to post it, you can. I do want to talk about one statistic, and this is where I'm frustrated with this justice system. Because, you know, like I said, they said that this was his first offense. It wasn't his first offense. He was a repeat offender. I want to talk about the strangulation aspect of it. So I'm going to read this statistic to you. While non-fatal strangulation is considered to be a major red flag for future violence in adults, studies show recidivism rates for juvenile sex offenders are relatively low, with findings from 5% to 13%, depending on the study. Landmark studies conducted in 2000 and 2010, respectively, concluded that 5% of juveniles were charged with another sexually related crime within 10 years and 9% within 20 years. That's significantly lower than the recidivism rate for juveniles convicted of other crimes, which the studies found to be as high as 57%.
But you're adding strangulation in here, which is like, strangulation is a red flag. I mean, also strangulation is like hip now, which is fucking nuts. Like the choking thing. I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
I just think it's like, I have nothing wrong with people who want to watch porn, but I think it's very bad for young minds. Very, very, very bad for young minds. And what becomes normalized among groups of kids, like groups of kids believe that they are insular, that if any adult knew what they were doing, that their life would be over or whatever. So the things that become normalized within these social groups can be incredible. And to me, like the choking thing is one of those things. But I think that these girls were very brave. I wonder like how much the fact that they went together made a difference to them, because, you know, going to report something by yourself is less scary when there's someone sitting with you who said that also happened to me. So
especially when the guy who's doing this to you has already warned you that if you tell anybody that they'll come after your family and that their family is powerful and they will take you down and no one will believe you. I mean, for a 15 to 16 year old girl, we have girls in my house that are 14 and 16. And though I know that they're both pretty spunky and they definitely love to give their opinion, and they would definitely not, I would expect that they wouldn't keep quiet about this. They would definitely tell us at least. It takes a lot of courage, especially with, you know, social media and all the social constraints that they have, to come forward and talk about a kid who's this powerful. So I really feel for these women, but I'm so proud of them. Well, young women, I'm so proud of them for coming forward, and I'm so proud of their families for also standing up for them. And also this community who is, you know, making their voices heard. I have heard rumors that people are not happy about this, the way this went down, and that there may be a grand jury summoned.
It's a state rep, right? Who wanted to be, they wanted to look into it, like a state.
Yeah,
politician.
For sure.
Yeah. Oklahoma is an interesting place, man. Oklahoma is,
it is
really conservative, but at the same time, very independent. Like they have bucked some constitutional amendments that were supposed to pass. They've been very, people of Oklahoma seem to give few fucks about what people outside of the state of Oklahoma think of them from both sides.
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting kind of weird place, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, this case has really been bothering me, and it's obviously in the news right now. Everybody is sort of talking about it. Just in the Nick of Crime, I don't know if you're familiar with that social media account, I think TikTok and Instagram. He has actually spoken with several family members of Jesse Mack Butler, who are very upset with what he's done and want to speak out about it. So I'm hoping that some of those people will talk about it, because his mother and sister and father are really just like insulating this kid and being like, our little golden child did not do this. So anyway, I have a tendency to dig into cases about sexual assault for personal reasons. I covered in a 7-part series on the In Between podcast about Veronica Rodriguez's story as well, which I'm hoping to also tell you about here. But if you want to listen to that, you can listen to it on the In Between podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And I don't know, any other thoughts? Do you have anything else going on?
No, just want to let people know we are continuing to follow the Kelsey Fitzsimmons case. We know that there's been some movement there, and we'll talk about that on an upcoming episode. And other than that, I'm just going to say I need to maybe get more sleep tonight than I did last night, staying up reading all of those stupid billionaires writing to each other in their nonsensical emails. But anyway.
I can't understand why everybody has always been like, Jeffrey Epstein was a brilliant man. He was so, you know, charismatic and powerful. And when you read those emails, he just sounds like a douchebag, like a doofus.
Like a grifter. Yeah. I mean, it is interesting that he would have a direct line to Vladimir Putin. That was something was interesting to me.
Yeah. He has some connections to other people.
When I say direct, I mean through another person, but that's direct enough for me. I certainly can't get a message to Vladimir Putin that easily.
No.
Anyway.
Okay. So the last thing I want to do before we go is I want to say thanks to our tippers.
All right.
real
Thank
quick,
you very much for supporting the show. If you like it, consider sending us a Venmo tip. We do have memberships available. We are going to figure out what to do with those memberships if you want to get in on the action early. And Mel has already put up the Venmo graphic. I guarantee it. It's going to be right here. And it's Venmo, and the handle is at Mel Barrett Writes.
Yes.
B-A-R-R-E-T-T-W-R-I-T-E-S. At Mel Barrett Writes.
So I want to say thank you to, I'm just going to say first names here, Bruce, Jennifer, Edith, Angelica, Grace, Amanda, Tina, Melissa, Jill, Stacy, Tara, Mana, Anne, Rebecca, Karen, Gretchen, Jessica, Chloe, Alexandra, Elizabeth, Heather, Robert, Kelly, Audrey, Tracy, Yenny, Holly Ann, Marcella, Stacy, Isaac, Jennifer, and Shannon. I think that's everybody. I think I don't have.
I think one of those Jennifers may have been my sister, by the way. Just FYI.
Oh, that's so sweet of her.
I just found out my sister belongs to our Patreon yesterday. Aww. I was like, you know, I could just send you a link, dude. Like, we're related.
It's very nice, like family discount.
Exactly.
But yeah, so thanks to everybody. And once we figure out how these memberships and everything work, we will give you updates about that. And then hopefully we'll do a live pretty soon.
We'll overserve you.
Yeah. I'd love to do interviews too. Maybe we can have somebody on for our live and talk to them about the cases that we cover.
Love that. I would think that would be spectacular.
Awesome. All right. So this will be out tomorrow, and I will see you hopefully this week sometime.
Unless you tune into Core TV tonight at 9 when I'm scheduled to be on Vinnie Politan's show. So we'll see. This is Friday again.
This is a new case you're covering?
I mean, it's a new case they've asked me to weigh in on. I'm covering it. I mean, the name of the show is Vinnie Politan Investigates.
Mm-hmm.
What's being investigated is very unclear to me. Like, the level of investigation itself is more like, let's just chew on this and see how we think about it. That's the investigation. So,
you know, Vinny, I was hoping that you were going to be brought on for, because Vinny covered this Jesse Mack Butler case pretty in depth. And I was hoping that you were going to be on for that, but you weren't.
That would have been great. That would have been great. And so, I would have been more knowledgeable coming into this for sure. So thank you very much.
It's kind of fun to tell
you
about something, you know.
Yeah.
That you
thanks for telling me about it. I feel smarter and more angry than I did before. So I appreciate
that. Okay, great. That's my goal. All right. Take care, everybody. And thanks again, Rebecca. I really appreciate you.
Appreciate you too. Thanks a lot.